南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。
It's the 3rd of December already. Man, time. Okay, we're going to continue with the Langavatara. I think we're entering a new chapter. Yep, we sure are. Chapter 7. And we're going to start out, of course, with Mahamati asking yet another probing question. Mahasattva, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Mahamati, says this to the Emancipated One. How was it that the Enlightened Ones, in this case, Arhats, but I think this is a misuse of the word Arhat. Let's just talk about the accomplished students. We're given assurance by the Emancipated One, Shakyamuni, of their attainment of supreme enlightenment. Now remember, this is the Langavatara, not the Lotus Sutra. But he does this in the Lotus Sutra where he directly confronts the Hinayanists, right? The Arhats, the Sharvakas, Pratyekabuddhas, Bodhisattvas of that ilk. But basically, those who have scorched the seeds of Buddhahood, right? Because they've just reinforced their ego rather than releasing that ego. And the only way to really release that ego is by interacting with others and assisting their enlightenment, which in the process of practice, as you and I practice the Lotus Sutra, seems to be inescapable. Right? Because the more we practice, the more we seem to draw out of our environments the curious, the people who want to know. So how can you be a Buddhist and shun their deep desires for enlightenment? You have to support them. And that's bodhisattva behavior. And that's how we attain a much more complete, perfect enlightenment for ourselves, let alone the world, right? But at some point prior to the Lotus Sutra, there were instances in the sutras, in the sermons, where Shakyamuni assured some that they would eventually attain enlightenment, right? So Mahamati's saying, well, you know, so how is it you said that to some people? And how can all beings attain Tathagatahood? Tathagatahood, oh boy, it's going to be a day, without realizing the truths of Parinirvana. How can these students of your teachings, who are working hard but still maintaining a self, ever attain Tathagatahood without this transcendental knowledge, this prajna? What does it mean, he goes on, from the night when the Tathagata was awakened to supreme enlightenment until the night where he enters into Parinirvana, between these times the Tathagata has not pronounced a word. Okay, Mahamati is starting to float into this space that he's been resisting all the time, of Tathagatahood existing within samsara. And he's confronting Shakyamuni himself, and he's saying, how is it, since you were a man, and then you attained this enlightenment, and you're here now talking about it, But your Buddha-ness, your Tathagatahood, hasn't uttered a word, because by your own description, Tathagatahood has no characteristics, has no being, born, death. It's a condition. So where is this communication happening? What are we, you see this border he's having a hard time getting over? Yeah. The physical reality of life versus the energy of life. Well, I don't hear the energy talking. I see and hear a man talking. So where's this Buddhahood? Not a bad question. What is the meaning of this, that being always in samadhi, the Tathagatas neither deliberate nor contemplate? Right? No discrimination, no argument, blah, blah, blah. How do Buddhas of transformation, being in the state of transformation, execute the works of the Tathagatas? Still talking about this. Where's this border? How do I cross it? Yeah? How is the succession of momentary decomposition explained, which takes place in the Vijnanas? Can I witness the dying of my mind? It's not what's happening. He's still, again, he's having trouble realizing the experience moment to moment as distinct from the cataloging of the experience moment to moment. Okay, Mahamati, I get you. Further, what do these statements mean? That Vajrapani is constantly with the Tathagata as his personal guard, that the primary limit is unknown and yet cessation is knowable, that there are evil ones, their activities, and leftover karma? Shakyamuni, facts of karma hindrance are said to be shown by the Tathagata in the incident of the Kanka or Kansha daughter of the Brahmin, of Sundari, the daughter of a mendicant, an empty bowl, etc. How can the emancipated one, with these unexhausted evils, attain all knowledge? Same question, right? Different form. How can I, as I'm coursing through this life, stumbling over an extension cord, be in Buddhaness? How can those two coexist? So Shakyamuni says, Mahamati, listen well, reflect within yourself. The realm of nirvana, where no substratum is left behind, is according to the hidden meaning and for the sake of the practicers who are thereby inspired to exert themselves in the work of the bodhisattvas. Again, exactly as I just said, this aha, this Buddhaness, comes of the samsaric effort to assist others to attain this awakening. That itself is awakening. Okay, still not sure, right? Mahamati, there are bodhisattvas practicing the work of the bodhisattva here and in other Buddha lands, who, however, are desirous of attaining the nirvana of the Shravakayana. And here he's identifying this misunderstanding, that the Shravakas, the excellent students, who understand the words of nirvana, who understand the idea of nirvana, and who are pursuing their idea of nirvana instead of nirvana itself. In order to turn their inclination away from the Shravakayana and to make them exert themselves in the course of the Mahayana, the Shravakas in transformation are given assurance as to their future Buddhahood. You'll get there. Just keep working on it. By the body of transformation. But this is not done by the Dharmata Buddha. This is, again, identifying the instruction versus the achievement. We all need guidance. We need guidance to take our samsaric focus existence being into a realm that we first have to imagine. And then once we experience it, those are our insights, our aha moments, yeah? Then we most assuredly know prajna, wisdom, Buddha wisdom, is the experience of. The experience of is not the words describing it. It's not even the effort made to achieve it. It's only in the achievement. This is why the Lotus Sutra eventually comes about, because for our world of intense distractions and attachments, only the most immediate, the most moment-to-moment instantiation of enlightenment will suffice to excavate our insights from all of this. That's why this is the ultimate practice. Namo myoho renge kyo. Deliberately being in Buddhahood, yeah? That's why I made that other video on concentration and slow down, savor Buddha-ness. It's not a race to the finish. It's a beingness. Be in it. This giving assurance to the Shravakas, Mahamati, is declared according to the hidden meaning. The hidden meaning. That there's no other way to inspire someone to work toward Buddhahood than to imply that they can achieve it. And we do. And when we do, we no longer need, we need to inspire ourselves, right? And that is the Tathagata instructing us. Because the Tathagata isn't Shakyamuni. It's not a human. It's not a thing. It's an experience. And only with that experience can we desire to maintain it. Yeah. Just like anything in life. Until you experience something, you really don't know what it is. That the abundant or the abandonment of passion hindrance by the Shravakas and Pratyekabuddhas is not different from that by the Tathagatas is due to the sameness of the taste of emancipation, the experience of it. But this does not apply to the abandonment of knowledge hindrance, because that's how we maintain our insights, right? And that only happens in samsara. So there's the border defined clearly. Knowledge hindrance, Mahamati, is purified when the egolessness of things is distinctly perceived. Read experienced. All the definitions are only there to lead you to the experience of it. But passion hindrance is destroyed when first that the egolessness of persons is perceived and acted upon, for then the manovijnana ceases to function. Your storage, your data warehouse of information, categorizing and identification, when you instantiate Buddha-ness, all of that becomes relegated to the warehouse instead of being the world, your experience of it. It suddenly goes, oh yeah, I have all that stuff, but oh, this is something else. Namo myo renge kyo. Yeah? Further, Dharma hindrance is given up because of the disappearance of the habit energy accumulated in the Alaya Vijnana. It is now thoroughly purified, or surrounded, if you will, if you're familiar with my discussions on the nine consciousnesses, by Buddha-ness. It doesn't disappear. Our glued experience of the world disappears because now we have a far greater, broader vision / experience of the world. Yeah. There is an eternally abiding reality which is to be understood according to the hidden meaning, because it is something that has neither antecedence nor consequence, not consequence C-E, but consequence with a T. The Tathagata points out the Dharma without deliberation, without contemplation, and by means of such words that are original and independent. So again, this is word salad to describe this Buddha-ness, this perceptive experience that there are no words for, there's no incantation of, there's only the experience of. But Sylvain, the Daimoku's an incantation. I suppose definitions being what they are, you could say that. I prefer the word invocation, simply because invocation implies that there is something pre-existing that simply needs to be put to act. And that's what we do when we deliberately chant Namu Myo Ho Renge Kyo. We are deliberately instantiating what's timeless, what's always been there, our ability to experience the motion, the momentum of all karma, all energy manifesting in its innumerable, unfathomable potentials, instantiating. That's what we're living. That's life writ large, yes? Not just Bobby's life or Tamara's life or Sylvain's life, but life. Oh, that's happening right now, right now, right now. Because of his right thinking and because of his unfailing memory, he neither deliberates nor contemplates. What does this mean? How did I get here? He's just being. He is no more at the stage of the fourfold habit energy. He's not just plummeting through life. He is free from the twofold death. He has relinquished the twofold hindrance of passion and knowledge. The Tathagata is completely consumed in the beingness of life. It's an experience. It's not predicated on anything. Mahamadi, the seven Vijnanas, that is the Manas, Mano Vijnana, the Eye Vijnana, the Oral, you know, all the consciousnesses, are characterized with momentariness because they originate from habit energy. They are destitute of the good non-flowing factors and are not transmigratory. They're just collecting moments. That's what they do. That's samsara, the building of the database, the warehouse of databases, yeah? What transmigrates Mahamadi is the Tathagata Garbha, the energy of life, the full potential of life. It transmigrates is a way of saying it's without time. Therefore, every subdivision of time-space, the smallest you can measure, you can continually divide. All of it is of the same engine, the Tathagata Garbha, which is the cause of nirvana as well as that of the pleasure and pain. Because from the Tathagata Garbha, the energy, the quiescence of energy in formations, produces everything we experience, and conversely, that experience isn't defined by what it creates, what is of energy is of energy. And to experience that process of energy becoming is the wonderful witness ability of our minds to experience a whole different level of appreciation and participation in the grand scheme of life without getting stuck on every single little manifestation attached to identification of just being in the great flow of energy, a far different experience of the stuff of life. Yeah. This is not understood by the ignorant whose minds are torn asunder by the notion of emptiness. Because when we say the word emptiness, we think of it as another place. Well, this isn't empty, so emptiness must be somewhere else. Where is that emptiness? You're telling me everything is empty? No, that means I'm letting go of stuff. Of everything that's not me. Right? Until you understand this new experience that everything, including you and me, is ultimately just this flow through time. That to try to hang on to identity of things and self is what causes our suffering. I keep coming back to that, but understand that's what Buddhism is about. It isn't about identifying this mystical otherworldliness or breaking your brain. We're all the same. It's just a method of understanding the experience of life that unhinges our experience from all of the passions, the voracious collection of data to identify a self. That is where our stress and our anxiety comes from. So if you want to live the exact same life without those tugs and pulls on your emotions and your mind and your worries and your anxieties, understand that all of that is an investment in suffering. Stop investing your very identity in identifying and start to see everything. And maybe a way of saying it is to go ahead and identify, because that's what your brain does. But identify with a mind, a parent mind, if you will, of observing this drama unfolded before you as an experience that's not tugged at, not your very identity. Self-realize Buddha-ness. Self-realize your mind's capacity to know without being affected. Your affection then becomes liberated to be compassionate and an acute observer without the politic, the discolorations, the habit energy of being tugged one way or another. Therefore, you can see clearly without the baggage. Be in it fully without the baggage. The baggage being whenever I see something blue, I get angry or and that's not something we say to ourselves, but it is something in our consciousnesses, in our profound conscious, that performs the epistemological task, right? The foundation for experiencing of these things based on previous experience of these things, it discolors the beauty of the things as they are, moment to moment. We're not erasing anything. We're just getting out of the way. And this is often forgotten as you dive into these discussions with all of these words sounds like we're identifying this new place, this new way of being. It's just an awakening of the mind. Our perception shifts. And that alters our experience. Yes? Mahamati, the Tathagatas who are accompanied by Vajrapani are the Tathagatas transformed in transformation and are not the original Tathagatas or fully enlightened one. In other words, our dedication to our practice is our protects our ability to instantiate this Buddha-ness, this new mind of experience that's always been there but been heaped over by all of these attachments and habit energies. Yeah. So again, in the spirit of personages, creations of identifying names to identify behaviors, certain mindsets, when Mahamati asked him about these guardians of Tathagatas, those guardians are a way of interpreting our resolve, our conviction. That's why we're doing this right now, to keep our conviction, our dedication strong, to know without a doubt. And we do know without a doubt when we chant, but when we're not chanting, that's where the stuff penetrates, the habit energy, the attachments, yeah, come flooding right back in. So what keeps us practicing? Nothing other than our conviction. Sometimes just our dedication. Whatever words you want to put around it. The Vajrapani, another word. The guardians of Buddha are my own mentations on getting back to my Buddha-ness. The central idea is completely throughout all of these words, but it's easy to get lost in the words, isn't it? And then you want to go, look, what are all the Vajrapani? Let me Google that. Yeah, and you can go down that rabbit hole for a few days. Ultimately, it's you. It's your effort. That's the Vajrapani. The original Tathagatas, Mahamati, are indeed beyond all sense and measurement, beyond the reach of all the ignorant ones, Shravakas, Pratyekabuddhas, and philosophers. These Tathagatas are abiding in the joy of existence as it is. Can he say it any more plainly? As they have reached the truth of intuitive knowledge by means of Jnanakshanti. Okay, another lovely word we can go research. That penetrating wisdom, that experience, that aha, that insight of the experience of Buddha-ness. It's amazing how very clear Shakyamuni is being here. But, of course, you and I can see it clearly because we're practitioners of the Lotus Sutra, because we've already achieved it. Whereas at this stage of the Mahayana, very few, if any, had achieved it. Yeah? So Shakyamuni is still dangling the carrot. Come be enlightened. Come see what it's like to be in Buddha-ness. Come on, you can do it. And this is what Mahamati actually is identifying or forcing Shakyamuni to point to. Thus, Vajrapani is not attached to them. Your resolve of Buddha-ness isn't required when you're in Buddha-ness. That just feeds itself. Wow, I just want to be here, yeah? All the Buddhas of transformation do not owe their existence to karma. In them there is no Tathagatahood, but apart from them there is no Tathagatahood either. So this is that difficulty you hear me struggle with in words, of that formations, the energy formations are the instantiations of samsara. Seeing that process is Tathagatahood, right? Buddhahood. But Buddhahood cannot be attained or experienced, better word, without being in samsara. Because to witness the process is to have the process to begin with. If there was no process, there would be nothing to witness. So this clarity of understanding the process of life does not require the formations as to be the observer. The observer can only be attained, achieved, via the stuff to be observed. It makes sense, right? If energy is quiescent, well, there is no karma, because karma is energy with action, energy with work applied. Energy plus work equals karma. Karma results in all of the thus, the thisness, the suchnesses, is an expression of karma. To witness the suchnesses of karma emerges from a mind of observation, and that mind of observation has its traces, its very foundation, outside of the karmic expression. That witnessing doesn't require a specific karma, and yet without all of the karmic picture, has no reason to instantiate. It has no purpose. It has no actions to instantiate. So this is a tough thing, because here we are at that border again. Well, if everything we observe is precipitant of karma, then to observe everything that's instantiation of karma certainly must represent some special karma. And so Shakyamuni is trying to disabuse Mahamati of the idea that there's some particular formula or repository of golden fairy dust or whatever from which Tathagatahood is instantiated. What Shakyamuni is trying to describe is that the observation of life is from a state of knowledge and represents itself a kinship with, identifies that position of observer as the quiescent energy itself, or equates to it. Within our experience of life is our witness from outside that experience of life. And so that mental place isn't of this life, but without this life can't be experienced, because there's nothing for it to experience. Gosh, it's a permeable membrane of sorts, isn't it? But Shakyamuni is very careful here to say, no, you can't find Tathagatahood under a rock or in a book or in a special place or in a monastery or in the world of tendencies and conditions. The world of tendencies and conditions is life. But to observe life from a vantage point mentally that isn't engaged, entangled in it, can't be of it, and yet can only occur from within it. This is the conundrum of enlightenment, right? This is why it can't be ever a denial of, an annihilation of, because that's self-annihilation, Buddhahood annihilation. That's inappropriate thinking. That what Buddhahood then becomes sort of released to be, this is the key, becomes a tremendously profound compassion. Because of its holistic understanding of life as a general thing, for the experience from which it is instantiated. That Buddhahood stands outside of causality, while at the same time only perceivable from within the causality. So it's not just the quiescent energy. It's a state of mentation, of mind, of perception that is no longer affected by causality. So it's like a third place. It's not quiescent energy, but it's not embroiled in the entanglements of samsara either. Yet it owes its experience, Tathagatahood. It's identified as Tathagatahood or Buddhahood or enlightenment or awakening as an aspect of experience of all manifestation of energy, karma, etc. It doesn't have its own karma because it's not a manufactured thing. And yet it can only perceive by virtue of the manufactured things. Is that making sense? Like the potter who is dependent on various combinations, the Buddha of transformation does his work for sentient beings. He teaches the doctrine, meeting conditions, but not the doctrine that will establish the truth as it is, which belongs to the noble realm of self-realization. And here we get back to a statement that you've often heard me say. It's that nobody can, again, because Buddhahood isn't something you can excavate from thingifying, I can't give it to you. You can't pick it up at Walmart. You can't find it in the words. You can only find it in your experience of it. And that's personal to your mind, your sentient mind. Otherwise, I'd be a billionaire handing out Buddhahood to people. And I would do it. If I could do it, I would do it. Oh, yeah. In a hot minute, as they say. Right? It's only you that can do this. Because Buddhahood, this vision, this understanding of this great drama, continual sparks of instantiations of life, it's specific to you. This is Shakyamuni repeats this constantly. You have to do the work because it's your enlightenment to experience. When we experience it, we're all experiencing the magnificent life, this universe. But even the universe, remember the fountain analogy, even this universe is specific to your mind, as specific as it is to mine. The state of Buddhahood is identifiable only by our individual experience of it. Therefore, it cannot be traded in. It cannot be negotiated. All of that is in your mind for you to do. Further, Mahamati, on account of the cessation of the six Vijnanas, the ignorant and simple-minded look for nihilism. That must be where it's to be found. If I just get rid of everything else, it'll show up. No, it isn't everything else. They just don't get it, right? And on account of their not understanding the Alaya Vijnana, that freight train of karma, they have eternalism. Because if there's a freight train of karma, that's the soul. That's what the soul is that freight train of karma. No, no. Because that's sparks. They just alight and dissolve. There's no eternity there. Not even the process is eternal. We're already talking about the death of the universe, right? We have for hundreds of years. We know that everything arises, abides, and dissolves, right? That's the nature of all things. Even our samsaric life has a beginning, a middle, and an end. That's just the way, the process of karmic manifestations. They never sit still. But a rock, no. Mars, an asteroid the size of Mars struck this Earth that we know and changed the chemistry and maybe brought the organisms that would eventually become the life that we know, the life being trees, plants, animals, humans. But there is life outside of those things, right? The universe has a life. The solar system has a life. The galaxy has a life because it's all a process, a great engine, right? The primary limit of the discrimination of their own minds is unknown, Mahamati. Emancipation is obtained when this discrimination of mind itself ceases. He's talking about the mentations, the attachments to things, the mind, the warehouse mind. Yeah? With the abandonment of the fourfold habit energy, the abandonment of all faults takes place. So it is said, the three vehicles are no vehicle. There is no nirvana with the Buddhas. It is pointed out that the assurance of Buddhahood is given to all that are freed from faults. Ultimate intuitive knowledge, nirvana, that leaves no remnant. This is told according to the hidden meaning in order to give encouragement to the timid. Knowledge is produced by the Buddhas and the path is pointed out by them. They move in it and not in anything else. Therefore, there is no nirvana with them. In existence, desire, form, rupa, theorizing, this is the fourfold habit energy. This is where the mano vijnana takes its rise and the alaya and manas abide. The sparks, making sparks. Samsara. Nihilism and the idea of impermanency rise because of the mano vijnana, the eye vijnana, the senses. They're the ones who want to adhere to things. Those are your consciousnesses of cataloging, of data forming, right? Eternalism rises from the thought that there is no beginning in nirvana, intelligence, and theorization. They must have always existed. this time problem, yeah? And that's how he ends the seventh chapter on transformation. I hope I did a good enough job of disassembling that. If not, please let me know. Hard for me to know, because I'm in my own words as well. Suffice it to say that there are some key points made in this chapter. Just to close this talk out. Again, reinforcing the idea of impermanence, that everything is a spark, an instantiation, a manifestation of potential. And potential can't be quantified because it's constantly finding new ways of expression. And that is life. To observe life is not to be outside of life, because the observer is life. But to be detached from the passions, the ownership, the data collection, it's a tertiary place. There's quiescent energy, that is no thing, noumena. Then there's this phenomena, the universe and everything within it, constantly roiling and expressing its potential. And then we humans, attached to all of the, who are manifestations and sparks of that very process, are admired in grabbing, owning, being a part of that life process. To stand mentally outside of it as witness is another formation, a witnessing that is of the karma writ large, but not without specificity of identification with certain streams and amalgams. And yet, as I said before, your experience of Buddhahood is not the same as my experience of Buddhahood. Because this aha moment, this observation of life writ large, is still constructed of your vantage point. And that vantage point has its own characteristics. And yet you can't identify those characteristics, because the minute you do, you're in samsara again. So this is the seesaw of bodhisattvahood. To be a bodhisattva is to course in the world of things, but with the mind of observation, not emotions, attachments, fears. All of, we relegate that to this level of attachment, the samsaric world. But if we can respond to live within that life without the jostling and stress and anxiety of being in that life, we can be freed, emancipated, to experience completely without confusion, without predilections. Everything becomes amazing. And therefore, a profound appreciation for the dramas that it instantiates, the opportunities that it instantiates. It severs our identity to I am this set of karma, to look at karma at work, I can perceive it, and my self then becomes selfless, unidentified as a particular stream, and perceives all of the streams. How overwhelming. How amazing. How participatory rather than separateness. Yeah? All right. Probably far too many words. I hope this fed you some insights. That's what's important. if you saw something in this that gave you any kind of inklings, aha moments, I think I get that. That's what we samsaric beings need to stay focused on Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, right? That is the purpose of study. We'll get there. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you. Thank you for listening, for participating. Please support this effort, this sangha, this channel. Like, subscribe especially. And if you can, support. Support by means of offerings to Gohanzon, to enlightenment, by virtue of candles or incense or money, whatever you can do to help support this channel growing is bodhisattva work. So with deep appreciation, thank you for all that you've done and will do. Stay with your practice. Be kind to yourself. Stay healthy. And I'll see you in the next one, okay? Bye for now.